You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 433, The Number of the Beast. Well, not the beast, but a beast. Lots of beasts have numbers. And welcome to the podcast. My name is Adam Lloyd. I'm recording for you here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. This is the second take of our intro because I wasn't recording during the first one. So I would like to reacquaint myself once again with Mr. Tom Trauma in Grand Rapids, Michigan, or somewhere around there. Hey, Tom.
Yes. Recording in my makeshift library den back room area.
Is calling it a library kind of like a hoity-toity thing, or is it like full of leather-bound tombs?
No, just books stacked all over the place, and records and CDs and things that I literally haven't put anything away for like years. And it's half library, half hoarder's paradise.
Well, I mean, if you're gonna die in a pile, that's a kind of cool pile to die in.
Yes, like if a bookshelf were to fall over. Well, of course, there's a lot of other people in the house. Someone would probably find me eventually. My screams wouldn't go completely unanswered.
But speaking of dying in a pile and unanswered screams, we also have Mr. John Gentile.
Boy, that was smooth, man. Really smooth.
Well, I got to say, my favorite beast is Beast 1732, the noble mountain goat, which, fun fact, isn't actually a goat. What do you think of that?
What?
The mountain goat is not a goat. It's kind of its own thing. I think it's kind of similar to a llama, but it is not a mountain goat.
What about the beast with two backs?
That's Beast 69, Tom.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Sorry. You know, those numbers are hard to keep track of.
What about Beast Robin, the older nephew of Baron Harkonnen?
I don't even know.
No
what
one
that
wants
is,
to talk about Dune on the podcast. Fine. Okay. So
I'm not very familiar with Dune. I mean, there's some like sand dunes over by the lake, but no, I don't know Dune.
Adam, should I get into Dune? It seems so daunting because there's like 47 novels, like two movies, and like both are supposed to be bad or something.
No. So here, one of them. See, here, I will now give the official Punk News podcast crib notes to Dune, because here's how you get into Dune. And I only give this advice because I have done this in recent times, and I'm about to be very rewarded with it. Rewarded because they're casting this Dune movie now, like a proper movie by the I don't know the name of the director, the French Canadian guy that directed the new Blade Runner movie. Anyways, though, so he's
Francois Marquis.
Sure. Anyways, though, so he's casting like this big budget revival of Dune, and the cast is amazing, and like they keep adding actors into this thing that are just cool. It's gonna be amazing. The casting is really cool. Anyways, though,
I won't watch it unless it's Sting back.
I know. So, but no. Here's the thing. So, I've never seen David Lynch's version of Dune, the one that includes Sting. At one point, because I'm cheap, I was looking at Amazon, and it was like these books are on sale for your Kindle, and I could like get Dune for a buck. And I was like, I'll try Dune because I tried it when I was a kid, and I could not get anywhere. It was impenetrable. But I'm now an adult that has some patience, and I've really enjoyed Dune. And the reason I enjoyed Dune, John, is the theme of Dune is it sort of sent there's the main character in it is sort of meant to is built up to be one of these messiah figures that you have in fiction, right? He goes on his hero's journey, but he's reluctant about it. He doesn't want it because at some point he has this vision of the future where he knows that, like, if he becomes the hero, then people are going to basically jihad across the galaxy in his name and slaughter everyone. And he doesn't want that, but he is just like, fate is forcing him into that role. And it's really cool to read something like that after, you know, consuming so much like normal hero's journey fiction where, you know, Luke Skywalker is the greatest because he's the hero. He's the chosen one, all that shit, right? That this is like, sure, this guy's the chosen one, but it's going to make us all die. And I appreciate that in my age. And I finally got all the politics of it being older. But anyways, you can read Dune, I think, as an adult who is my age, and it would be digestible. It would be something you could deal with.
I will check that out. But let me mention my favorite sci-fi messiah figure conflict. Star Trek The Next Generation in season 4, Worf is having a crisis of conscience. So he goes to some Klingon retreat, and sure enough, Klingon Jesus shows back up, but they don't really believe it's him. But Worf, being kind of the chump that he is, believes it's Klingon Jesus. And Klingon Jesus is like, I'm the new boss of the Klingon Empire. And so, of course, the actual boss of the Klingon Empire, Gowron, who Worf is always like making fun of for not being like good enough Klingon, shows up and says, you're Klingon Jesus? And Klingon Jesus is like, yeah. And then Gowron's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to whip your ass. And then Gowron whips Klingon Jesus' ass, and everyone's stunned because Klingon Jesus just got his ass whipped. And it turns out that Klingon Jesus was a fraud. I won't give you these specifics. The point being is Worf's always going around saying, oh, I'm the best Klingon. I'm the most moral Klingon. But when it came to it, who acted more like a Klingon when facing, I guess, a great power? Worf, who cowered and said, you're so right, Klingon Jesus. Or Gowron, who showed up and said, well, you might be Klingon Jesus, but you might not. So I'm going to have to kick your ass. That's why Gowron is cooler than Worf. Boom. End of podcast.
There you
boom.
Go. Mm. Now, boom.
You get spoiler alert on 20-year-old science fiction show, right?
Mm. So just getting back to Dune here, because it's really important. I've actually not read any other than the first.
And any female listener we had, we totally just lost.
Yeah, whatever.
I mean, when did the Dune books come out? It had to be in the 60s, right?
The internet knows the answer to this question, and if I sing, 1965. So, anyways, there are several follow up novels to it, none of which I have read at the moment, but. I have the next one queued up. However, it's one of these things that, like, as that author died, this Christopher Tolkien thing happened where his son sort of like took over all of his notes, yes, and just started like writing more stuff that people don't like. So it's not as many books as one would think if you ignore all of the heretical other things that came out in its name. Anyways, Dune is cool. There's a guy in it named Beast. That's how we got into this. Anyways, we're on a podcast. Yes. John, are we doing mail or are we jumping right into other things?
Let's do record collecting this week. We haven't done record collecting in a while, and I know the listeners love it almost as much as they love listening to me talk about Worf. So who wants to go first? I'll go first. I got to, you know, listen, man, I've got to slow my roll, man. I've got to cool my jets. Man, I have been on a record buying spree the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 months. I need to cool it out. Woo! That being said, I got like 3 super cool things recently. And I'm just putting a pause on everything for a while, man. First thing that I got, I'm going to talk about 2 cassettes and 1 other thing. The first cassette that I got, this slipped through my fingers about 7 years ago. I could have got it and just totally slipped through my fingers. And I finally came across one about 7 years later. I got the Neurotic Impulse demo tape. Do you guys know who Neurotic Impulse is?
No.
Adam, you might know.
I don't think I do.
Before World Inferno, there was a band called Sticks and Stones. Yeah. World Inferno essentially formed out of Sticks and Stones, the two main guys, or well, 2 of the main guys, Scott Hollingsworth and Peter Ventantonio, who became Jack Terrycloth, formed World Inferno after Sticks and Stones broke up. Before Sticks and Stones, there was a very just completely unknown band called Neurotic Impulse. And they put out a demo tape with, I think technically it was probably an album, but just on cassette, self-released. And it is the very first recordings of any band that features Jack Terrycloth, Pietro Ventantonio. And it's more of a collector's item than it is like a release you got. I mean, it's cool. It's cool, but it's very standard mid-80s hardcore. So, you know, like Gorilla Biscuits influence, that kind of thing. It's not amazing. However, it's pretty cool. It's the very first appearance of Jack Terrycloth on any recorded medium whatsoever. Of course, that band would actually break up and go on. Actually, that band threw Terrycloth out of the band and then became Vision. And if you talk to him about it, like, he's still mad about it. And it's weird that he's mad about it. It's like World Inferno was like way bigger than even Sticks and Stones is like bigger than Vision ever was. But he's still mad about it, which was bizarre. Well, I think it's bizarre. Anyways,
who got bigger is not the point.
You're absolutely right. Like, you would think that you'd be glad because you got like. World in Front was not gigantic, but they're bigger than Vision, you know? I was thinking about showing it to him, but I thought that might be weird and creepy. I don't know. You know what I mean? the second thing that I got is the Choking Victim demo cassette tape, which is different than the Choking Victim demo CD, which was going around in circulation for a little bit. The Choking Victim Choking Victim demo CD has tracks from the Choking Victim demo cassette, but it doesn't have all the tracks from the Choking Victim demo cassette. And I got that, and man, it is cool. It actually is as like sonically, it's as good as the Choking Victim 7. It's actually better sounding than the Choking Victim 7-inch, the first 7-inch. And it's got basically almost all of No Gods, No Managers in demo form and a couple of other tracks. And it is a really neat release. But the question is, with these two demos, because like, what do you do with, like, they're both at, well, the Neurotic Impulse one's like over 30 years old, yeah, and the Choking Victim one is almost 30 years old, and it's like, well, I mean, they're tapes and they go bad and they break, so like, I listened to each of them once, but I'm like scared to listen to them for fear that they might break, you know what I mean? But then what's the point of having them if I'm not playing them? I don't know, you know what I mean? And then the third thing that I got is I've been trying to get this for about 15 years. The Coup have an album called Party Music. And Party Music was released on – I think it was released on September 11, 2001. Give me 1 second as I pull this up. But it actually has two covers. The cover that people see today is actually the second cover after the first one was produced. I should have pulled this up before we started talking. Give me 1 second. The cover that we see today is actually the second one that was produced after a kerfuffle with the first one. Here we go. All right, Party Music. Party Music was released November 6, 2001, right? And the original cover had Butch Riley and Pam the Funkstress blowing up the World Trade Center towers before September 11.
Oh, I remember that. So, like, yeah.
It was produced in June 2001, and I think they only made about 1,000 covers or something, and the vast majority of them were destroyed. But as always, a few people kind of snuck them out of the factory or whatever, and a new, much less interesting cover was manufactured. I finally got a copy of the original band Coup cover of the album, and it is very eerie, and I always wonder, is it unhealthy to collect that? Because the only reason there's notoriety is because it's kind of bleakly forecasted a very real tragedy. So I don't know if it's good taste or bad taste to have that item. I don't know.
It is totally a strange collectible that history has created. Anytime you can get your copy on an album that has been like basically pulped because they were worried about some sort of blowback or because there was some sort of error, that's a collectible. The fact that it was made a collectible because of like some horrible thing that happened doesn't like it, I don't know. You're not collecting it because you're out there collecting 9/11 related memorabilia, right?
True.
The motivation is, I think, a big part of that. It's like if you went out and you wanted to get like a copy of that that Beatles record where they're like in the butcher cover of
the babies.
Yeah, where they're just like all these like you know, doll parts and blood all over them. You want that because it's a rare, weird Beatles release that was unreleased for obvious reasons. You don't want it because you enjoy the butchering of babies. I mean, maybe you do, but not the rest of us.
That cover actually was later released as I think there's a Beatles rarity album, and they put that picture released in like 1980, and they put that picture in an official release of that record. But in case the listeners don't know, the Butcher cover, it's Yesterday and Today. There's I think four versions. The most valuable and expensive version is the one that just has the Butcher cover. The second valuable and expensive one is the one that has the Butcher cover, and then it's had something had the
covered up.
The third, they call it third state, is someone peeled off the cover, and the fourth state is the one without the Butcher cover whatsoever. So you're right, Adam. Indeed.
Mm-hmm.
But I got to cool it out, man. I'm buying too many records. I got to cool it out.
See, Me too. You want to go next, Adam? Go ahead.
Yeah, just because like I was trying to buy too many records, and I failed utterly. I went, there's a record show that like periodically happens in St. Catharines that is not bad for St. Catharines size area. And I went in there on last Sunday morning and I had some, you know, like I sold some stuff. So I had some free money floating around that I didn't feel guilty about spending. And I'm like, I'm going to go to this record show thing and spend my free money. And it was fucking busy and like line out the door, like the room was at capacity and they had to let people in when people are going out and all that. So it was just a hop in place, but record shows, man. It bums me out because it sounds like something that should be up my alley, but maybe it's just the area I live in, but they are inevitably just saturated with like the dregs of the boomers and that's it. Right?
Oh, it's an older crowd.
Well, yeah. But the problem is that like, you know, outside of the people that have been collecting records for, let's say, 30 years, right? Those dudes, the guys that are like digging through like dusty boxes of old country records, or just like those just heaps of 45s that are in no sleeves that are all just rubbing against each other. But yeah. Right. Those guys
in
aside,
shoe boxes,
those guys aside, the whole 90% of what feels like are in these shows are like middle of the road stuff from the 70s. And that's kind of it. Like with like a large portion, because of where I am, of like these of all these fucking Canadian can rock bands from
BTO,
lots of BTO and lots of fucking
Triumph.
Like Trooper and Triumph and all that shit, right? So,
yeah.
But because of the fact that, you know, vinyl in the culture sort of died out when we got into the 90s, stuff that would have been from the era when I started listening to music doesn't really exist. So you can go to these shows and you dig through these boxes and you get sort of like up to their, say, like punk new wave section. And then you get past the new wave and you get into like a little bit of 80s stuff. And then it just sort of peters right out. So
By the end of the 80s, vinyl was pretty much dead.
Right? So it's just like
there's a dead decade there, basically.
So the stuff that I feel that I would that in my fantasy mind I would be crate digging for and like going and, you know, finding something that's really cool, it just doesn't exist at this kind of show. So I was there for a couple hours just digging around, and I bought one lone thing. And it's not even like an interesting find. It's just something that I needed a good copy of. Like I found a really pristine-ish 1978 copy of Are We Not Men, We Are Devo, which it is good. I want that. It is one of the great records. I love that record. I did not own it on vinyl previously, so I do now. But could I have found 8 copies of that in the place? Probably, right? Like it wasn't a find. It was just like, well, I need milk. Like, it was that kind of thing. Like, yeah. Everybody needs a copy of that record. It wasn't some amazing. Like, John, you talk about these – I don't know where you find this shit, where you'll go and you dig and you find some weird variant of something that features the first appearance of this dude. I go to these things and I see, like, 900 copies of, like, Mike and the Mechanics. And
Oh, I love that first Mike and the Mechanics album. Seriously. I was, like, 10 years old when it came out. No, that probably was mid-80s. I love that first one. Silent Running.
It depends on the record. Like, as I found before, there's kind of like 3 kinds of record stores, record conventions. There's punk record conventions, dad record conventions, and kind of like what I'll call country folk record conventions, which, you know, that's where they'll have like rock, but a lot of country and that kind of a thing too. Punk, you'll get the coolest stuff, but you'll pay the most for it. At dad record conventions, those tend to be overpriced, but sometimes, like, if you're in a classic rock like I am, you can get some like awesome, like, you know, you can get like Nazareth for like $3 or something like that. Country record conventions, where they get all kinds of stuff, or country people record conventions, that's where you're probably going to find punk and country ones are where you'll find the rarest stuff. But the question is, where do you find the ultra, ultra rare stuff? A, either you pay for it at the punk convention, or you find it like – and you got to dig through some shit. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to dig through – for every Canadian version of Guar's America Must Be Destroyed, you're literally going to dig through 1,000 to 5,000 copies of, you know, Fleetwood Mac's Rumors or something. But the point being is, pretty much not entirely, but pretty much 90% of my very greatest scores I paid like almost nothing for, because it's just in some box on the ground. The guy doesn't know what it is. You know what I mean? Like I got
you pay for it in sweat equity, dude. Elbow grease, just getting in there and working.
Exactly, but not only that, it's not only like, is it, I guess, quote, cheaper or whatever, but like I've only ever seen Guar's the Canadian version of Guar's America Must Be Destroyed once in a 50-cent box. I never ever have seen it anywhere ever else again. You know what I mean? And so that's, you know, and like, if you don't have that much time, it usually isn't, because if you're on a time constraint, it usually isn't worth really doing that, because you usually come up with crap. But if you're at a record convention all morning long and you're there to have fun, dig in, you might find something awesome. You know,
and that's like, you know. It's a certain kind of personality. It's just like myself. My wife and I go to antique shops a lot and secondhand store, stuff like that. It's something we enjoy doing together. So I'll dig through boxes of record. But the fact of the matter is, yes, you dig through hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of records, and you might not find anything. So you have to have a certain type of patient personality to do it. Or like the other day, where I found a really nice copy of, you know, a Lionel Richie album that was huge when I was a kid in really nice condition for $1. So I'm like, oh, cool. I mean, I already got my money out of it when I listened to it the first time when I got home. But you know what I mean? It's like only certain people can do it. Most people don't have the patience for it. And I honestly don't have anybody who I hang out with that has that patience. So if I do it, I pretty much have to do it by myself, or go to like an antique place where my wife can look at, you know, dishes or whatever.
Man, I love record convention. I can go to record conventions every week, man. Dude,
I can't do it, but I fly solo. And if I find 2 really good pieces, I'm happy, just because I don't have the huge, you know, a huge budget for that.
But it is bummer when you go to record convention and it's like all, I feel you, Adam. Like, it is a total bummer when you go and it's all like overpriced, or it's all like dad stuff. And I never understand these guys that, like, the dude's like 60 or like 55 and he's buying Sgt. Pepper. He's like, oh, this is Sgt. It's like, dude, you're 55. You don't have Sgt. Pepper already.
This,
like,
why is different than the 3 I have at home.
I know. I'm sorry, Adam. Go ahead.
Well, so the one big difference at this one, and this actually factors into a little bit of a news story, just to keep drawing this section out, is so one of the big Canadian music news stories recently is that there was a vinyl distributor in Ontario called RPM, and they just went like bankrupt, and they owed like $100,000 to like 2 or 3 of the big indie labels in Canada, and they owed, I think getting up close to, say, like $1 million to Universal. And Universal, like, up in Canada, maybe this is the same in the States, but Universal, like, distributes tons of stuff, like most stuff, right? So RPM went out of business. Now, there was, at this record show, forever that I've gone there before – there was always a table that was like the whole length of the room where they had nothing but brand new stuff and for cheap. So like new copies, sealed, shrink wrapped copies for cheap. And it was a table basically where RPM was running at these record shows to sell off just like surplus stock from their warehouse. But and I got the feeling that the crusty record dudes that were like they're selling their bins of stuff hated them. But at the same point, I would always go and go through everything that they brought in because they happen to be the distributor for like a lot of the labels that I will follow up here. So I could go get, you know, like, I would go get the, you know, a record from Weaves or Grays or A Tribe Called Red or one of these bands that I follow for like $10 or $15 or something, where if I would have went to the record store and bought that new, it would have cost me, you know, 20 or 30.
So, 20 or 25.
Yeah. So it was great that it was there, but I totally get why, like, it was intruding. Well, now they're bankrupt and they were gone. Like, they were not there. And I heard just like all the old crusty record dudes were elated because it was just eating into, like, it was just sucking all the air out of the room, basically, that those guys were there. So on the one hand, I didn't get anything, you know, I didn't get the just like discount record shop new stuff, but I'm happy for those. I'm happy for those crusty weirdos. They deserve a break. Tom, did you get anything?
This is perfectly describes the dichotomy of my record collecting too. So at the beginning of February, the first weekend of February, a couple weeks back now, I went to something that was in Grand Rapids at a little bar called the Midwinter Punk Fest. And all 3 days were really good, but I was only able to go one day. I went Friday night and it was a band playing called Bare Knuckle Hooligans from South Bend, play like a classic Oi style punk. They played it last year too. And I was afraid I was going to run out of drinking money. So I grabbed a CD for $5. And I loved the album so much, and I regretted that I wasn't able to get it on vinyl. Well, they came back this year and played, and I bought a nice copy of the clear copy of the Bare Knuckle Hooligans full-length album, Never Walk Alone. So that made me very pleased. It was like that was worth the price of admission right there. And, you know, it's a punk show, so it was like $14, you know. And there was another band playing that I'd never heard before, and they were called October Bird of Death, and they were from Chicago, and I was semi blown away by how good they were. So I picked up their 7-inch, which had 5 songs on it. You know, it's classic kind of hardcore 7-inch where you get basically half an album on a 7-inch, and it's really good too. So I was really pleased with my buys. And the other end of the spectrum, I've been a huge CD collector. Vinyl has been kind of hit and miss. I've actually purged my LPs several times over the years. So I still have a real big 7-inch collection, but my LPs have been kind of dwindling. But I've sort of been creeping back into it for a couple reasons, but the big one being that some of my favorite bands stopped doing stuff on CD. So if I wanted to get a physical copy, I had to get an LP version. So now I'm pretty much fully sucked back into it, and I'm like replacing – or not replacing, but rather making sure I have all my very favorite albums. So recently I picked up Rhino reissues of – the Sex Pistols album and Misfits Walk Among Us. And I got to tell you, they sound so good, man. It makes me so happy. And I'm glad to have them back in vinyl, even though I had them on CD. And I actually had the Sex Pistols on cassette. I think I had them both on cassette at one point and maybe vinyl too. But anyway, so that's my record. I'm either like buying new stuff or I'm buying stuff from bands at shows. Or I'm not new stuff, rather the classic stuff, or I'm buying stuff at shows. Or like my wife and I will go out and I'll find like a sealed copy of the Hooters Nervous Night album from like 1984 that I loved when I was like 10 years old. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is an original 80s album and it's still sealed and it's $10 and I'll buy that. And, you know, if I find one record, like I said, when we're out and about, it seems like I always find one thing, you know, but that's, yeah. So it's actually not a dichotomy. It's a trichotomy, a thing. I don't know. Those are my three record buying things. But I also, John, have been buying like a madman, and I don't know. I don't know if I slow down or not. I probably, but.
Well, you're going to die in that pile.
Physical,
that you're in,
all physical for me, all physical for this old guy. But yeah, you know, and like I said, I'm really at a point in my life where I should be thinking about getting rid of shit, not piling shit on. That's the main thing, you know, but Yeah, it's fun. It brings
me not too long, right?
It still brings me joy. One of my kids has already moved out. Yeah, they're starting, but my youngest one's only 11. It's gonna be a while.
Yeah, so fill that hole in your family with material objects.
fill that hole in my soul. You know what, dude? My oldest son moved out, right? And his car broke down, so I've been trying to help him get his car fixed. So I'm like, is this still my problem? Why is this still my problem? But, you know, I guess, you know, it is what it is. So. We bond however we can bond.
Cats in the cradle and the silver spoon. Little boy blue and the man in the
He just moved down the road. He's like less than a mile away, so anyway.
Yeah. All right, John, are we gonna maybe play a song and then we'll start rolling?
Yes, I'll play a song. I will play a song by Ellen and the Degenerates. They just released a new album. It's fantastic. This is something off the new album. I don't know yet, but it's cool and it's great. And this is Ellen and the Degenerates doing a new track off the new album. Check it out.
Let's talk about some news, some things that went on here. And what are we, 30 minutes in? We're just getting the news. This is a good sign. All right. So
35 minutes.
So we were talking about some record stuff. So let's just touch on a couple record related stories here, just so that you are aware, people. First of all, the ambassadors for Record Store Day 2019 have been announced. It is Pearl Jam. That's not exciting for me. But anyways, that means that the band's going to do promotions for the event, and they are going to release some music for themselves on that day. So Record Store Day 2019 is on April 13th. John, any particular thought on this? You just wanted to conclude it?
Yeah. Listen, I am not a Pearl. Like, Pearl Jam is one, like we talked about Grateful Dead last week or the week before. I have sort of tried to get into Pearl Jam, but not that hard. I just can't stand Eddie Vedder's voice, and I can't stand the song's tempos, and not a fan. I respect them to a degree. Their live CDs are kind of cool, and that they do a lot of covers and interesting sets and stuff, but I'm just not a fan. The point being, though, I think this might be a poor choice for Record Store Day, and here's why. It's a good choice, but it's a poor choice. If we acknowledge that the point of Record Store Day is to get people interested in records that weren't interested in records before, and if the point of Record Store Day is to get records, get music fans into the record store, Pearl Jam is a poor choice, because every Record Store Day, Pearl Jam puts out stuff. And honestly, like if you've been in line at 6 a.m. and 5 a.m. for Record Store Day, like I have been, a lot of the people there are just like Pearl, like, oh yeah, they're reissuing Pearl Jam's 10. Oh yeah, they're reissuing Pearl Jam's first record. Oh, I'm so excited for the Pearl Jam. I've already got 7 copies of Pearl Jam. It's so great. I love Pearl Jam. So the point being is they're already Record Store Day is already playing to an audience that they have. And so what's the point? I know it was Metallica who was a Record Store Day ambassador, Chuck D. I think all of those were great Record Store Day ambassadors, because those fans didn't necessarily collect a lot of vinyl. And since then, especially with Metallica's vinyl has like exploded over the past few years since they were Record Store Day ambassadors, if you will. I mean, the Record Store Day itself is kind of cheesy, and we don't need to rehash our conflicting emotions on it. But the point being is, as a business standpoint move, it's good in that that Record Store Day consumers love Pearl Jam. That's like one of their favorite bands overall. But they're playing to a market they already have. So I don't know who Adam underscored it perfectly. Who is going to get excited about this? People that don't love like Pearl Jam is around and they're a huge band, but like, people that aren't interested in Pearl Jam, are they going to get excited about a Pearl Jam ambassador? It's not really. Whereas Chuck D, you know, Public Enemy has lots of fans, but they have lots of people that think Public Enemy is cool but don't really know a lot about Public Enemy. So Chuck D as an ambassador is great, because that would get people to say, oh, maybe I will check out Public Enemy. Or, you know, Chuck D's got a certain gravitas. So, you know, this is cool. He's sanctioning it. This is a good idea. Same with Rollins, to tell you the truth, when he was a Record Store Day ambassador. But Pearl Jam, like, that's not going to win over any new fans. So what's the point, you know? The point being is the fans do love Pearl Jam, and Pearl Jam has always put out records, and the fans have always been into that. So it's cool that they're doing nice for their fans that they already have. But from a business standpoint, where's the new audience? Who's getting excited about this? Not a lot of people.
Wow,
you really think the ambassadors are bringing people in, John? I couldn't care less. I don't think it matters at all, honestly. I mean, I really don't. I don't think it matters. I mean, Pearl Jam, you're right. It's what you call a safe choice. You know, it's like they're not going to pull their nipples out for the Super Bowl safe choice. But I just don't think it really matters much either way. They make a few promotional videos, but I think Record Store Day is one of those things where either you're into it or you're not. I don't think you're going to be drawing a lot of people, new people, into it. Opinion, obviously.
I just wanted to let your nipples comment have some space there. All right. So speaking of things that some dad somewhere might want to buy,
let my nipples free, so to speak.
So here's a weird product that is going to exist. So Porsche. Do we say Porsche or Porsche? I don't know.
I say Porsche, but I think everyone outside of America says Porsche.
Yeah, I think that's technically the way. I mean, I am Italian. You're Italian too. We should figure this shit out. Okay. Anyways, so Porsche, they're no longer going to be racing.
I will defer to you, Italian.
Yes, in the Le Mans competition. So their last win was in 2017 with a 919 hybrid, and it was their 19th win overall. Why are we talking about this? We're talking about this because the tires of that vehicle were shredded and are being pressed into a series of single-sided records with 24 minutes of audio on it that recounts Porsche's Le Mans history. They're only making 200 of these.
And Porsche's German. I didn't think they were Italian.
Oh, no, why was I thinking Italian? See, I don't even know. Europe is all the same, John. It is. Think about it.
I mean, it's only as big as the Midwest. The whole damn place is only as big as the Midwest.
I don't know the difference between a fucking Minnesota or a some other place in the Midwest. So whatever, what's the matter?
You know, I could put you in the middle of Minnesota, the middle of Michigan, the middle of Illinois. You wouldn't know the difference.
Exactly.
Or Ontario for that matter, Adam, probably on it during the summer.
Okay. Anyways. Okay. Let's get out of geography here. They're making these records for some reason to sell to people that probably have too much money. John, are you in for one of these?
And no record player, probably.
I always enjoy a good gimmick. Although that being said, is I'm certainly not going to buy these. They're actually auctioning these, and they're probably going to go for like a ridiculous amount. And then I'll never forget like when the Wu-Tang record dropped $1 million in value, and someone put on the thing. Well, that's Wu-Tang. That's not Shkreli's fault. It's Wu-Tang. Wu-Tang just doesn't hold value. And I think this just won't hold value either, to tell you the truth. I think it's a cool gimmick. But on the other hand, it's like this is, to a degree, this is very much a underlying metaphor or example of kind of what, you know, big business does is they take something that's kind of cool, hip and underground, and then they pull it into the mainstream, you know, use it to assert a certain coolness to themselves, you know, and then just kind of like destroy it and move onward, you know. And this is not going to destroy records, but like, what does Porsche have to do with records? Like, nothing whatsoever. And to a degree, I mean, like, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, Porsche is very much, I would say Porsche is not considered a rebellious company, if you will. If anything, they're, you know, if you play the game and are, you know, devious enough, then you'll get ahead and you can buy a Porsche. That's kind of how the finer things. That's how Porsche markets their thing. You know what I mean? So to take something.
Yeah, I don't think you have to do anything. I don't think you have to do anything illegal to get one, but it's definitely a high end automobile. It's expensive.
No. What I'm saying is they mark themselves as the finer things in life, you know, which is kind of the opposite of how most music presents itself. Most music presents itself as something as rebellious, at least post 1970. You know what I mean? And so for Porsche to take this and attach it to themselves, I think is kind of silly, but I mean, like, it's nothing new, you know, with CBGB, the airport bar, it's the exact same thing.
John, they got some rubber, so they're making records. It's like you got lemons, you make lemonade. That's all.
They could have made condoms.
They could have. You guys have heard that. Holy shit. Could you imagine? Those, that would have
like
been.
That's like that submissive, like weird sex wear stuff. That's made out of rubber, right? Latex.
See, that is the market for someone that wants some commemorative Porsche gear, someone that wants to get some condoms and a gimp mask. And
commemorative Porsche ball gag.
The point being is, pick a side. If you want to be Mr. Finer Things in Life, that's your choice. But then why are you trying to pull – the reason you're trying to pull certain facets of the underground or hip culture into your own life is because you know there's something missing, and you know that money doesn't make you whole, and that's why you think buying this record will complete your life. But it won't. However, buying records will complete my Tom and Adam's life. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Yes.
So speaking of the finer things in life, Rancid is playing what is this thing called? The Bash. The Bash, which is a traveling craft beer festival. It's going to have a bunch of different bands that are playing it, depending on the dates. Rancid and Pennywise, Suicidal Tendencies, L7, Madball, H2O, and a handful of others. So this thing is kind of crawling around the – what is it? It's all over the place. It's in both – the East and West Coast.
Look, mostly West.
Mostly West Coast, except for New Jersey.
I thought it was mostly West.
Well, yeah. Idaho, too. You know, and Arizona isn't really – well,
that's pretty far west. And Idaho is pretty far west. Those are both pretty far west.
Let's talk about Adam's grasp of U.S. geography. I don't know where Idaho is or what it is.
It's west.
If you were to give me a map that had no labels and say, where's Idaho? I would stare at you blankly and say, what's Idaho? Anyways, so this thing, it's kicking off on May 11th in Phoenix. It's playing Tucson, Englishtown, New Jersey, Boise, Tacoma, San Jose, and Sacramento. So it is a trend in punk rock craft beer festivals. At least we had those high profile ones that NoFX were involved in, somewhat controversially sometimes. John, though, you got an angle on this. What's your angle?
We talked about the idea of craft beer on the Punk News podcast before, and I had a writer change my mind. The writer said craft beer is definitely punk rock because it's done by small companies that kind of want to do their own thing, and they do it better than, you know, Coors or what's that company, Ambev or Bevco? What's that giant beer company?
Miller Coors, and then there's a German company that owns Budweiser. I can't remember what they're called. But yeah, there's basically like three giant brewers that make almost all the beer.
Yeah, so there's a vast parallel between the indie music community and the major labels and what happens in
Are you being facetious?
I don't know if there's a
No, I'm agreeing, but I am agreeing with you in a facetious voice for reasons I'm not entirely sure.
Fair. Wait. The writer made the point that craft beer is punk rock, and I kind of bought that argument. I think actually that's probably accurate. However, I don't know, man. I'm trying to not be Mr. Miserable and Mr. Boo Hoo Hoo. Man, I've been boohooing a lot on the podcast. I've been frowning on a lot of stuff on the podcast lately. But I mean, man, this is punk rock and it's music and pretty much all the foundational punk rock things were like, you know, this is about, you know, society. This is about rebellion. If it's not about rebellion, it's about thinking for yourself. And it's about, you know, not just going along with the masses. Pretty much every punk rock of the first wave is about this. But this is punk rock. But hey, let's hang out and drink some beers and you know, let's take a corporate style music.
Oh, you're talking about the festival more than craft beers specifically, though. You're talking about these big festivals.
Well, I'm talking about this festival right here. I mean,
yeah. But I know what you're. But there's a difference between these festivals and the actual like craft breweries. I think.
No, I'm not dissing. I actually think I don't drink beer, but I think the craft brewery that are small and people run them, I think that's kind of cool. You know, I'm all for that, especially since you know they're American companies selling American products made in America. Big fan of that. I'm all for it.
Locally, you know, locally usually and distributed regionally usually only. So
I'm all for it. I'm talking about but the festival here is, you know, is this just kind of like, hey, you know, punk rock, it used to be something dangerous, wild, and about thinking for yourself. Now it's let's pay $12 for beer and relax, just like you know any other.
We're gonna sell you a lifestyle. We're gonna sell you a lifestyle, and it's not a hard scrabble lifestyle. It's a sort of that's all these festivals. So you look at the cost of these things, what they cost to go to, you know. And I went to one last year. I know I've gone to this well a few times now, but I went to one last year, and the prices are crazy. And you're appealing to a 35-year-old crowd who grew up listening to, you know, these 90s fat wreck bands, essentially.
I agree. So the point being is I don't think this is the worst sin in the world. I don't think it's, you know, but I got to say this doesn't make the argument that punk or any of these bands associated with this are exciting bands doing meaningful stuff. This to the contrary, this makes the argument that it's like, you know,
it's mainstream.
Yeah, there you go. Enough said.
You know, John, the thing that bothers me. So I actually, and I know this is a little off topic, but I went and saw Dropkick Murphys last night. Again, after swearing, I probably never would again, but they had good openers, so I ended up going.
Well, could you see them a whole bunch, you mean?
Yeah, and it's a law of diminishing returns. I really haven't enjoyed one of their albums for like a decade, even though I love their early albums. But anyway, but I was thinking about, you know, there's only like, you can count the amount of like legitimate punk rock, if you can even call them punk rock anymore, headliners that headline all these festivals. It's NoFX. It's Dropkick Murphys. It's Rancid. It's
Bad Religion.
Bad Religion's as a usually second line band. They're not usually a top tier headliner. They still play smaller theaters when they headline their own shows too. No, it's NoFX. It's Dropkick Murphys. It's The Offspring, and it's Rancid. I mean, literally those are your biggest ones. And there's and bands that we all are. Wring our hands that aren't bigger, you know, are in the second or third tier. Like I said, even a Bad Religion, they're more like a second tier. But yeah, it's just sad. So you get these same bands over and over again, and it's kind of dull, honestly. You know what I mean? There's nothing.
Yeah.
There's no underground element at all.
And this is anyway. this though comes back to a little bit of the discussion that we were having on the episode where John had the bail, where we talked about the Maximum Rock and Roll. And I was talking a little bit about how I could sit down and go through, an issue of MRR and Punk News would have talked about zero of the bands. Right. Well, this is kind of the flip side to that, is that like you could go and find someone that's like really tracking the punk underground. And they wouldn't have been paying attention to Rancid or Pennywise or the Dropkick Murphys or whatever beer festivals that they're playing at all. Like that's such a world beyond what certain levels of the punk press and fan base are into that I try to avoid looking at something like this where it's all these bands that were the big bands from when I was 14. And I don't want to look at this and project, oh, well, that's what punk rock is. It's, you know, it's fat and old and comfortable, because, you know, we're only talking about it because those bands have name recognition. But on the other hand, you know, I was in a fucking bar at midnight on Sunday watching a bunch of cool punk bands play cool punk songs, you know, last weekend. And there was, you know, the vibe was correct in that room, right? These were underground bands. People were there to see them. It was, you know, for all intents and purposes, it was exactly what I would have wanted from punk bands doing punk stuff. And it in no way made the genre seem old or slow or fat or lost or unvital or anything like that, right? And it's just like what you choose to pay attention to. So Rancid is just clearly, you know, they're and not to this to be a detriment to them. They're at that point in their lives and careers where they can go do a thing like this. And, you know, I don't fault them. Go get paid. Go.
You are absolutely, you know, I still go to a ton of local band shows too, Adam, or like I was talking about that little regional thing I went to. It was regional bands and local bands. I can't tell you how much fun I had at that show. I can't tell you how much camaraderie there was and how great it was. And it was, you know, $5 to get in or whatever. And, you know, last night I went and saw Dropkick Murphys and it was like a $35 show. And it was, I got to say, it was, the openers were good, but the Dropkick Murphys are pretty dull. You'll be able to read my words about them here in the next week or two if we get our submission thing straightened out. But anyway, and like I said, every time I go to a local show and deal with local people, you know, you talk to the bands and you really get a feel for what they're doing, and it's just so much of a better experience. I wish I did it more, but unfortunately, because I review these shows, in the back of my mind, I'm always going, well, nobody cares about this. Nobody's going to read about this. Sit down at my computer and write 1,000 words about something so I can throw it into the echo chamber. I want, you know, ultimately I write to be read, you know? So it is a frustrating paradox because, I go to these local shows and it's so good and the experience is so great. And once in a while, I'll think of an angle and write about it. But
you're absolutely right, Tom. And that we posted Kicker is an amazing band. I mean, they're not young guys, but they're a newish band. Kicker rules. We posted a Kicker review. Nobody talked about it at all. But we posted Avril Lavigne and people freak out and everybody reads it. You know what I mean? It's like,
dude, most of our readers are not that punk. I mean, I hate to be the gatekeeper of punk, but I mean, I've come to the conclusion that most of them grew up listening to the bands that we're talking about that play these craft beer festivals. That's the stuff that generates the most excitement. So I love it when I do like a throwback review of The Pissed or something and every 10 people were like, oh man, I love that record. I'm like, oh, that's awesome. You know, I write about the Dagle Abortions or something. They're one of the greatest bands ever. And it's maybe two people would be like, oh, cool, man.
I'm gonna mention myself again because I'm a narcissist. Tom, one of the members of The Pissed, is playing the Punk News Saturday Night Special this weekend.
Really? Who's that?
Bill, the guitar player, or Bill the bassist. Okay. He's in a band called The Brood, and he's playing the show.
Okay, where are they out of then? Are they in New England somewhere? Are they like Pittsburgh, or where are they from?
The Brood are in Philadelphia now. Bill recently moved out here and started a record shop called Wild Mutation. Very good record shop.
Okay, was he in Caustic Christ too?
I don't know. Honestly, I don't know.
Okay. Anyway, I'm a fan of those bands. Oh, that's cool though. I'm glad to hear that. I mean, at least you have, you know, some real true.
So we're punk. No one else is punk, but we're punk.
Yeah. Well, and we're listen. I am, and in a lot of ways, Adam, I am that fat, old, slow. You know what I mean? I get that to a certain extent, but I know I go hang out with some of these younger guys that are doing it, and I love it. I do. I love it. It fills me with a sense of energy that I can't get going to see a sort of nostalgia act, if you will.
Well, I feel that like a large part of it is that like, we can have both, I guess, and we just gotta be comfortable with that. So, you know, the fact that I can, you know, the thing that's gonna make my soul feel correct is where I can go to like a scuzzy pizza parlor in Welland and see like Flesh Rag and D-Boy play a bunch of stuff, right? So like that's and be in there with people that are there from, you know, from the local scene. They know the guys in the band, they know each other, right? It's a punk show through and through. I have to have those for me to feel like I am at all involved in this community in a healthy way. But that said, if you were to show up at my door and say, "Hey, we're gonna go drink a bunch of beer and watch Rancid," like, I would do that. Yeah, right. Like, I'm not made of stone. Sure, yeah. I'll do it. But I don't want.
No, I agree.
I don't want to do that and project that is the pulse of what's going on in punk rock, because it ain't.
And the fact of the matter is, you know, even we talk, Adam, guys like us talk about, oh, we go to these little shows and it's so great. But even that, you know, there's at least another layer or two below that.
Oh, I know, because yeah. There's people living in fucking squats, right?
Yeah, exactly. Oh. And I do that occasionally, but, you know, you get to be our age, my age especially, and me having a shaved head, I swear, I know all these guys, so it's always cool, but I mean, I'm pretty sure they always thought I was a cop when I first started showing up at some of these house shows. So yeah, it's definitely, and I know there's a whole nother layer. And once in a while, somebody's like, "Dude, check out this 7-inch," and it's just this most putrid, barely music garbage with like screamed lyrics that are so political it makes me blush. And it's just there is a whole nother level of. So I don't want to get too like, oh yeah, man, you know, I'm really hip with the total underground, because I'm not, you know, but I do love going to the local shows and the small bands and the, you know, and getting to know the people who make your music. There is a value to that. Yeah, you know, I don't know Tim Arms.
That's the thing. It's like, I never want to project that I am with it or I am. You know, I have my finger on the pulse of any particular scene or even punk rock in general. I just want to acknowledge that, you know, like I'm not, right? Like I want to acknowledge that, like, I recognize that I'm sitting here in one weird little corner of the world, and you know, I'm not presuming that I'm speaking for all of it, because like it goes so deep, right? Which is one of the cool things about punk rock in general, is just that, like, you know, if you wanted to listen to nothing but like weird local bands coming out of Portland, like that could be your whole world, and you never touch a band that's from anywhere other than there. And you could have a full and complete and unique punk rock experience and never need to go outside of that. So it is a daunting genre from that standpoint. So anyways, let's play another song here, because we're almost like an hour at this point on this very talky podcast. Should you, who's doing the next one here?
Go ahead, Adam. I actually don't have a song at the moment, so you guys probably skip me on that tonight. So go for it.
We can play a pissed song for you later on, Tom.
What's that?
We can play a pissed song for you later on.
There you go.
All right, so I'm gonna play a song from the new B.A. Johnson record. So B.A. is B.A. by the way, was he was the intro music for episode whatever I would have just posted. What are we,
433?
420.
Number of the Beast.
428, so 427. I don't know. I use BA as intro music. But anyways, so BA Johnson is the failed showman on the skids. He is it is partly a character, partly an act, partly a genuine way of life for this guy who has a one-man band, where he plays songs about being basically like a low brow schlub from the steel making town of Hamilton, Ontario, and it's about all of his songs are about, you know, being dirtbag basically. Anyway, so BA has a record coming out. It's his 11th or 12th LP. It's called The Skid Is Hot Tonight. It is coming out on this week, the week that we're recording this, actually February 22nd, on a Winnipeg label called Transistor 66. And here is a song from it that I previewed over at my little newsletter the other day. So it is a song called Jesus Take the Wheel. It is about BA touring the icy back roads of Canada in a shitty Dodge Caravan and spinning out on some black ice. And in that moment, deciding that he needs to find faith in God and repent all of his sins. So it's a fun one. So anyways, so here you go. So this is a song from B.A. Johnson off his new record called The Skid Is Hot Tonight. It is Jesus Take the Wheel.
Is that black ice, and am I gonna die? I see my whole life, see it flash before my eyes. I'm a tiny baby, I'm a fat old man. I got so much regret. I hear myself screaming, oh, Jesus, take the wheel.
Jesus, take the wheel.
Jesus, take the wheel.
Jesus, take the wheel.
I don't wanna die in a Dodge Caravan. Jesus, take the wheel. And as the cars fly past three lanes of highway, I wonder why I thought that winter tires were a luxury. As I spin out, I scream, Jesus, I can change it. If I don't die, you know I can change it. I'm screaming, Jesus, take the wheel.
Jesus, take the wheel.
Jesus, take the wheel.
Jesus, take the wheel.
I don't want to die in a Dodge Caravan. Jesus, take the wheel. Jesus, take the wheel.
Jesus, take the wheel.
Jesus, take the wheel.
Jesus, take the wheel.
I don't want to die in a Dodge Caravan. Jesus, take the wheel. Jesus, I can change. I won't steal pepperoni sticks from the big stop. You know I can change. I'll call my moms. I'll call my pops. I should have known better than to drive to Medicine Hat in winter. And I should have known better than to go over the Kootenai Pass. Ever not screaming, Jesus, take the wheel.
Jesus, take the wheel.
Jesus, take the wheel.
Jesus, take the wheel.
I don't want to die in a Dodge Caravan. Jesus, take the wheel. Jesus, take the wheel.
Jesus, take the wheel.
Jesus, take the wheel.
Jesus, take the wheel.
I don't want to die. I don't want to die. I don't want to die. Jesus, take the wheel. I don't want to die. I don't want to die. I don't want to die. Jesus, take the wheel.
All right, guys, we're back. We have like 19 stories that we need to go through. So we are going to live on the show edit about what we're going to talk about. So we have a handful of stories about the fact that everyone is a sexual deviant. Do we want to get rid of those? Do we want to not talk about those?
Yeah, you know, I don't have any real insight on those this week. I say kick them back.
Yeah, all right, there we go. We're going to knock these to it later.
Stop being dirtbags, people.
Stop being dirtbags. If
don't make me turn this car around and come back there or whatever.
If Ryan Adams shows up at your front door, don't let him in. Okay, so we'll talk about just some media stuff here to come back and to wrap this up. Actually, I want to bring back this one that I thought was an interesting one because John was asking a question about it here. So, Propagandhi, the much loved Winnipeg based political punk band, they're issuing a new version of their album from what would have been 2012. No. Yeah. Yeah, it was a 2012 record, which is called Failed States. So they're going, they're putting in a new version of this, and it's a remastered version of that record. They went and they had a Jason Livermore at the Blasting Room go and put together a new version of this. So John had asked when he ran across the story, like, is this too soon? Like, is it like, why would you have to go back and remaster a band, a record from 2012, which is a totally valid question. And in my mind, not a trend that I want to be a part of if that is actually what's happening. Because, you know, I can deal with having to buy remasters of Ramones albums, but not stuff that's, you know, within the same decade as now. But it turns out the truth on this one is that they hated the mastering on that record. So I went and I dug up some conversation from the guitarist vocalist of that band, Chris Hanna, talking about it. And he said, he said, not usually big on this kind of thing, tinkering with old recordings, but the remaster of the Failed States by of Failed States by Jason Livermore is fucking deadly. I was disappointed in the original mastering from the get-go. We simply ran out of time and patience to do anything about it back then. To my ears, I don't think the next record, which is supporting cast, would benefit from a remaster. It was done right the first time. So this is, I think, less them reissuing stuff to reissue stuff. I think in more them going, we hate the way this record sounds. Let's fix it. So I have a question, though, that comes out of this. Is that totally throwing some dude under the bus because someone mastered that record in the first place? And their
only
name,
6 years ago, right? He's probably not dead yet.
Like they ain't dead. Their name is on the Discog credits. Like you could go look him up. Is that throwing that guy under the bus, or is that if it's a whole record that you recorded, like is that just kind of what you got to do? Like you want it to sound the best, and you know, why write off a whole chapter in your life just because the mastering didn't work out right?
If a band is unhappy with a release, I'm fine with them going. Like, it's certainly a blurred line in that, you know, sometimes bands will like re-release stuff and they'll go back and they'll change the vocal tracks or whatever, and you're like, this is totally different, and it's really annoying. It's like it was perfect as it was. However, this, I guess, wasn't seen as perfect as it was, and it was seen as had good aspects but was flawed in some major areas. So I'm fine with a band correcting that. They are throwing this guy under the bus, but it's either one of two things. Either he did a crappy job and we shouldn't feel bad for them throwing him under the bus, or there was other things at work. Maybe they're Canadians, and Canadians aren't known for being direct with their displeasure at them. And so maybe he says to them, yo, guys, do you like this? Is this cool, or are you not happy? And they might have been like, hey, it's pretty good. You know, maybe we could do this or that. And like, maybe they just didn't, like, maybe if they said to him six years ago, you know, this is crappy, we need to change it, he would have been like, all right, let's make it how you want, you know. Or maybe the record label, you know, maybe they did a cool job, and he's like, here you go. And the record label was like, no, we want a different master, and then you got to change it this way.
Or the record label cut the money off before they were done, or who knows.
Yeah, and that's another thing.
I like the Canadian politeness angle, though, Adam.
Well,
like,
yeah, the Canadian politeness angle would work.
Righty.
It would work if it was me, but again, this is a band that has a song called Stick That Fucking Flag Up Your Goddamn Ass, right?
That, like, doesn't mean they're not polite, Adam. It's easy to write a song and be a badass, but it doesn't mean they act like that.
Perfect. That's right.
All right.
It's easy to write a song and be a badass, but it's tough to be a badass in the life.
It's easy to be tough when you're, making up a song, but when you're, you know, standing in line with Tim Hortons and they strip your coffee order, you're probably like, oh, that's good enough, eh? Thanks a lot. Right?
That is true. I've been known to do that. So anyways,
I'm diabetic, and this has a lot of sugar in it, but it'll be fine.
You know, there is one other famous Canadian band that remastered an album 6 years after it was released.
It's a Rush.
Russian Vapor Trails. Hawkwind is English, not Canadian.
I thought that was the answer to all your things. Was Vapor Trails from the era? It was like a 90s era record, right? Like, was that not one of
it was a 2000s record that was supposed to be like a return to Rush form, but it was just a band record.
I never even heard of it.
No, but that was from that was one that it constantly gets trotted out when people want to criticize the loudness wars in CD mastering, where they'll go and they'll compare the waveform of, you know, Tom Sawyer to the waveform of like anything from that one, and like it is just pegged, like it is just like a wall of, you know, there's no peaks or valleys, it is just like a white, you know, a white brick of music.
It wasn't easy to compete with Saint Anger, dude. But you had to try.
All right, speaking of Saint Anger, Seattle's Tapcoat are going to be releasing a new album. It's
called Taco Cat, Adam?
Tapcoat. It is Taco Cat. Why am I? Okay, I need reading glasses.
Did you say Tapcoat?
I said Tapcoat. Why am I getting a P?
Classic.
I'm looking at the word up close. And it says the letters for Taco Cat are there, but my brain is still reading it as Tapcoat. That is
yeah. What's a taco? Yeah, it is kind of ridiculous.
What's a tap coat, though? They're going to be releasing a new album. It's called This Place is a Mess. It's out on Sub Pop on May 3rd.
It's called This Mess is a Place, Adam.
Oh, my God. I'm going to go lie down. Good night. John,
you what just do you like the John, Canadian best.
John, just take this story. I'm out.
John, take the wheel. Taco Cats are putting out a new album. It's called This Mess is a Place. I think it's their fourth album, or maybe it's their third album. It's slightly different than Taco Cat is a really cool band. I would say they're somewhat analogous to the Coat Hangers in that, well, Coat Hangers are three young ladies. This is three young ladies and a guy. And what I really like about Taco Cat is they have a uniquely female perspective. And that perspective, I think, kind of gives the full – I'm not a woman, so I can't say what the woman perspective is. But I always appreciate a band that can, you know, maybe help me understand that perspective, or a perspective that I don't really have because I'm not that kind of a person. And I love Taco Cat because they're funny, they're punk, and they – you know, like one of my favorite Taco Cat songs is a song called Time Pirate. And it's a song from the of a girl. She's having a party, and this guy is just boring her to death trying to impress her about his band. And the song's called Time Pirate. She's like, you're a time pirate. Leave me alone. And it's funny. And honestly – guys rarely have that kind of a problem. That is a girl chewing your ear off that you're not interested in. That's usually if a girl's interested, the guy's like, yeah, let's rock. You know, with girls, they constantly have to be hitting on them and that kind of a thing. So with Taco Cat, my world is wide, and that's one of the things that I really like about them. And they have a feminist perspective, but it's a feminist perspective that isn't all men are evil. It's a feminist perspective that says, that is interesting. Maybe I could do better, but also, you know, men have good qualities too. And I love Taco Cat. This new track is called Grains of Salt. I liked it a lot. Interestingly enough, though, this track is way different than their older stuff. Their older stuff is pretty much, you know, kind of garage punk. You know, this track is basically a pop song, or actually, it's basically a disco song, to tell you the truth. That being said, I dug it. And interestingly, the lead singer, I don't know her name, but she's a very impressive person. Not only is she in Taco Cat, she's the editor of Bust magazine, and if you're one of these people that is like really into like these high profile limited run magazines that like are like really expensive, and you wonder how they stay in business, but they do somehow. They're like $20 each. She's the editor of Bust magazine, which is like that's impressive in of itself. And she's also in Taco Cat. She's a very interesting person, and I'm excited for this. This is cool, and I will check this out.
I refuse to engage in this story anymore because I've repeatedly butchered it. So
I have to take your word for it. I haven't listened to him, so I'll take John's word for it.
Yeah, all right. So just a couple other media things. One from me and then one from John here. So Pleasance Records in Toronto, they're going to be releasing a new EP from Vanity Phase. So Vanity Phase is a solo electronic project from Andrew Payne. Payne was the singer for Century Palm, which is a band that I was totally in love with. They were like a new wavy band. They had a record called Meet You that was out on Deranged. They were great. I loved Century Palm so much. So, and he used to play in a couple various punk bands sort of from every area of the country. He was in one of these bands. I've never had to say their name out loud. Like, it's, what is it? Zebra Sears or something. Zebra Sears, whatever. The Ketamines, which was a cool band out of the West. The Fun Funs out of Ottawa. So anyways, this new chapter that Payne is on, he got rid of his guitars. He got some synths. And he's doing weird pop songs that sound like Gary Numan or Devo or The Units. So the EP is called Unnatural Habits, coming out on March 1st. You can go to Punk News and check out a track from it, which is fun. So you should do that. I like this guy. Anyways.
This track is cool, man. I dug this. It reminded me of Gary Numan a lot. Not Tom is right that a lot of our readers are not punk because they were dissing on this, and this is cool, and this is underground, and this is pretty punk, and I dug this, Adam. I thought this was real cool.
Oh, actually, speaking of – could come back to what we're talking about in the record collecting part of this. So there is – so Andrew and a bunch of the guys that were in Century Palm and some other bands that I like, they all got together and they did a Devo tribute to celebrate the 40th anniversary of Are We Not Men? And so they played that album front to back, And they dressed like they dressed as Devo. It was fucking perfect. Like, it was great. Andrew Payne from this band here that we're talking about, he was Mark Mothersbaugh in that.
Cool.
In that setup. So there you go. Johnny, talk about Hawkwind. This song is cool.
Hawkwind, baby. They're back. If we want to talk about stuff that's driving the contemporary underground punk scene, it's Hawkwind. Nick Turner.
Well, that punk guy, he's making an album that's pretty contemporary too. Right?
Nick Turner, who was one of the two founding members of Hawkwind, he's one of the main members. The other main member is Dave Brock. Dave Brock is probably slightly more important to Hawkwind, but Nick Turner is very important too, and he's my favorite member.
Dave Brock's got the name, right?
Dave Brock has the name after years of litigation. And like, yes. is that even worth fighting? Like, I don't know if the Hawkwind name is worth that much, boys, but maybe it is, you know. Anyways, Nick Turner is definitely my favorite. He's a weirdo, and he's got a lot of albums. Some of them are amazing. Some of them are not good at all. Anyways, he's putting out a new album with Nicky Garrett of the UK Subs. In 2013, Nick Turner and Garrett, Nick Turner and Nicky Garrett released the Space Gypsy album, which I think, without question, is the best Nick Turner post Hawkwind album, with the exception probably being the Inner City Unit album. But it's a cool record. So they're getting together and they're putting out a new record. It's going to be called The Final Frontier, which is maybe a little bit too much of a Star Trek riff. I don't know, you know. But I'm excited. I've seen Nick Turner with Nicky Garrett live, and it is friggin' awesome. Because one of the criticisms of Hawkwind is that they get rocking, but they only get up to like 7 or 8, and they never take it to 9 or 10. With Nicky Garrett, Nick Turner takes it to 9 or 10, and it is a smasher, and it's cool. So I'm excited for this. The only, I guess, counterattack is Space Gypsy was an excellent album, but what it was is it was giving the fans what they want. That is basically a Hawkwind type album that rocks a little bit harder than Hawkwind, and it was fantastic. Meanwhile, Nick Turner has also put out a lot of really weird albums. He put out an album with Youth, which was completely improv, and it's like an electronic album. It's daring and it's weird, but it's not an easy listen. He put out an album with Helios Creed, which was called Chromium Hawk Machine, which was cool. It's like just Nick Turner and Helios Creed jamming, and it's like 2 CDs, and it's like 8 songs total, and every song is like 25 minutes, and it is Hawkwind to the extreme, but it's daring and challenging, and it's not an easy listen. The question this brings up is, it's Nick Turner, hypothetically this album is going to be Nick Turner and Nicky Garrett giving the fans what they want. Is that to be commended, or is that where art becomes a product?
John, how many units is this going to sell? I think it'll be all right.
Yeah, it probably sell about like 1,000. You know,
it's not like it's Weezer making a covers album. I mean, this is a band that can pretty much do whatever they want. I don't think we have to worry about. I don't question their integrity at this point. That's for sure. They're not doing this to get rich.
Fair. I will say I cannot recommend the Nick Turner and Nicky Garrett show live show. I've said it before. I'm gonna say it again, man. Like, it was an amazing live show. And the cool thing was, and I've said this before, I'm gonna say it again. It's Nick Turner, who's literally like 75 or maybe even 80, you know, in the front. Nicky Garrett, who's this grizzled old punk dude, just banging riffs. And to either side of him,
he's like mid 60s.
Yeah, I know. And he's cool, man. He's cool. And to either side of them, they've got these absolutely gorgeous, two gorgeous girls that both play electric violin, that both play the keyboard, that both love Hawkwind. And I've said it before, where do you find not one, but two gorgeous girls that love Hawkwind that can play electric violin and the piano? I mean, really? Like, it's a cool thing to see. You know, even from a non, like, oh, they're good looking, but even from a pure aesthetic standpoint, it's a neat thing to see. You should go see it.
Cool.
Well, there we go. Let's put a pin in it there, because we're going long. John, did you want to play a song on Tom's behalf?
Tom,
we can do a piss song if you want. That'd be cool. I'm cool with that. I'm going to do the first 7-inch I ever picked up from them. It came out in 93. I don't think I got it quite that early. I think it was more like 94 or 95. But the 7-inch that I got from them, the first thing I got was Destroy Society. So let's play the title track from that. This is punk kids, The Pissed, P-I-S-T, doing Destroy Society.